Okay, and welcome back. Hour number two. James Martinez, a very close friend and confidant of Marianne Shenefield for the last 13 years of her life. Who were some of the big names? We talked about this in our first visit, James. Who were some of the big names that she wanted to talk to that you were able to arrange time with her on the phone with these individuals? Just a couple.
The one, Brian Green, the author, that took a long time to arrange. And the author, Michael Talbot, with the Holographic Universe, who wrote the Holographic Universe, I put them in touch before he died. He wrote a book called Holographic Universe.
Michael Talbot?
Very popular. Michael Talbot, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is he related to David Talbot?
I don't believe so, but his most popular book that I think he did was The Holographic Universe. And I went to go see him speak, and after I read his book, I went, this guy, he'd be able to have a conversation with Marianne. And I did get them both on the phone, and he was blown away, completely blown away. He was asking basically if the premise of his book was correct, that they, our perceptions are a hologram and we're ultimately connected together entirely. We're not separate. We're not separated at all by any space. And she managed to get into that with him over the phone, because he when that book came out, he wasn't around for too much long after, maybe 6 years. So it happened towards the end of his life. And I arranged that because I had met with him. So that was, that was just, he didn't know what to think. He didn't know what to think. It was very hard for him to digest the information that she was giving to him, because obviously it was from a different perspective, and he was trying to find out how she was accessing information about him. Sure. And I previously told him, because the reason I put them two together is because a good friend of his, when he printed that book, was psychic medium. And that book opened up a lot of information regarding how the sixth sense works. And so I knew he'd be open to talking with her. But when they spoke, I was only on the phone for one of those calls, but they went back and forth a couple of times. And he ultimately thanked me for doing that, because it gave him some peace of mind that his last work wasn't a waste, because he died about 5 or 6 years after that book was published.
What a nice, that's a nice, very nice story. So he was wise enough to realize that she was validating his greatest effort, or his last great effort. That's pretty neat. Mm-hmm. And here's this nobody with no degrees, nothing, telling him, and this guy's a giant. Brian Greene's another story, American theoretical physicist. And
That was not a good meeting. Back in those days.
No.
In those days, it was, the internet was just getting started. You had to do it by letters and phone calls. And, you know, chasing people back and forth, waiting by the phone, all that stuff. And then I finally managed to get him on the phone, and I kind of begged him, because he really didn't believe me about what I was saying to her, because he just didn't even think it was even possible. Because I was trying to, I didn't want to say, oh, it's a UFO case. I left it as, this is a person that's developed brain sight and is clinically blind. And she's extremely gifted at being able to perceive other energy realities that you just can't see yourself. So he was, you know, he couldn't see her. He only heard her. But when he heard her, she had to, again, go through the process of description of what it is she was seeing, and then trying to listen to him to see if that fit into his model of worldview about physics and string theory and so forth. because she's actually seeing something and he can't see anything. It's just an imagination based upon previous learning. So it's two separate perceptions.
Yeah. His ego was, I don't want to put the guy down, I don't even know him, but his ego kind of got miffed, I think, from what you're saying.
Yeah,
it was a little difficult.
And he didn't, he didn't know how to respond to her objections and her additions of information to him.
This is funny.
At all.
This is funny. He met his match times 10, and he didn't know how to approach that. That's funny.
He was very threatened by interchange.
Yeah. Sure.
Because those conversations took place two or three times, and then, you know, PhD or whatever was intimidated by the situation.
Yeah, well, he's the string theory guy. And I think if I remember correctly, last time we talked, one of the first things she told him was, you got it wrong. It's this, it's not that. He could not tolerate that at all.
I remember him saying, well, how can you say that? And he goes, well, because I can see it. And
She said, because I can see it. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That is really funny.
What's going on here? And
I can see it, Brian. Yeah. What do you mean? Of course, I see it. It is
right.
That's funny. Okay, that's I think in our last visit as well. You can all hear that. Now, some of the other very esoteric areas that people I'm sure would want me to ask about. Let's just take the big one first. Death. What did Marianne have to say about death?
There isn't any.
There we like that. Yeah.
You never get it done and you never arrive.
It's
continual.
Say that again.
You're never getting it done and you never arrive. You're continuous. You're always moving and continuing and moving. It's an eternal process. So her idea concepts of death were, as many people have said, there is no death, but she could actually see the death process when people were leaving the body. In fact, one of the private moments I had were when Walter was dying. I was there for the final thing, not physically there, but I was there. I saw him the day before he died. And,
who is this again, please?
Walter Boward.
Walter, yes.
So I asked her to assist him in the process. And I was quite grateful that she did. And she told me the whole process of how he died because she saw it. And yes, all the stories about leaving the physical body and all the process that goes with that, it happens to everybody almost in the same way, but she oversaw his death, and I heard about it almost immediately when he left the body. She saw it and called me and said, he's good now. I said,
I left mine once.
She goes, you're going to sleep well tonight, she said. You'll sleep well tonight. And
what
I said,
nice
well,
thing.
What does that have to do with it?
Yeah, nice way to say it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was in a situation. I left. And the light, there's a light, it's real, and they sent me back. It was my time. And yes, I completely concur with what she said and what you're reporting here. Okay, there is no death. Are all people physical vessels on this planet equal? And I mean that in the sense, are there soul-less vessels walking around this planet? I don't want to call them useless eaters, some of the wags have. Are there people who don't necessarily come into this incarnation with the same baseline tools? Are they just walking shells? I that's a tough one.
Yeah, she Marianne and I talked about this quite a bit, and she was people would say that she'd be very religious. And she was, but she'd never go to church. She didn't like organized religion at all and said, if you have to get organized, it's not organized. You don't know anything because we're in church right now, every day, every second, every moment.
Oh, yeah,
and,
I agree.
You can't walk into a building and do this and pretend like this and then come out of the building and act like an idiot.
So
she was very hardcore about that, actually. So her take on religion was kind of training wheels to participate in godhood and co-creation and take responsibility for it. But well, at the same time, she knew there were multiple variations of what that means.
So there are a lot of people on this planet, a lot of people, who aren't necessarily part of the continuum. Does that work?
They're participating here to be. They're participating here to be the dark side. They want to die. That's part of why they came here, was to die. I had this discussion with somebody a couple of days ago, actually, that what's going on right now is you've got mass suicides, and those people have decided what reality is, and they know more than you, and da-da-da-da, and that's the path that they're taking, and they don't plan to be here with the new Earth. In fact, they're exiting now by default and actually running to get it done rather than transcending and taking their power back, et cetera, et cetera.
Dear friends, what James is saying is that they're lining up for the kill shots. You understand? When he said mass suicide, he's not joking.
Yeah. They're going to the other side early by default because they planned on doing that before they got here. When they took their bodies, they knew that there's going to be a massive transformation in the human condition, the integration of advanced intelligence and extraterrestrials and all this whole thing that we're talking about, and they didn't want to participate in that and have to have any responsibility of what it takes to interface with all of that. So they're getting out.
Once again, no responsibility, thank you. I don't need it. I don't want it. I don't want to be held accountable for any of it. I'm just here for the ride.
They're just not ready. They're not ready at all. At all. And
so there are going to be. Go ahead, James. Sorry.
No. I was just about to say that those that have chosen to be here at this time, they chose it. They planned on it. And you either gonna ascend or not. That's it. There's no gray area right now. And she would agree with me with that, too.
Right.
She totally would agree. And she said she wouldn't think less of somebody if they wanted to suicide out. She wouldn't think less of them, but they weren't here for that part of it. But most of the language that she told me was that the transformation of human consciousness had to be initiated by the self, you, me, and everybody else. The ETs are not going to come in and press a button and fix it all. That's not the way it's going to go at all.
No.
We're our own salvation. It has to be that way.
Otherwise, that's responsibility, James, and the people don't want it. They want to escape into their screens and whatever, and now they're going to escape this mortal coil with their damn shot. Many, many people are going to die here in the next 3-4 years. Many.
Yeah.
That's the way it looks. And I don't know. All souls are not created equal. These people who are checking out early, who came in to participate with and on the dark side, knowingly or otherwise, at some level they knew, they're not ready. It's a different class of soul. I guess. Is that a way to say it?
Yeah, that's definitely a way to say it. I mean, when the most important thing Marianne gave me was not only, confirmation of advanced intelligence, but an interface with it and participation of it, but also she got rid of a lot of phobias that most people have about death or dying or being in altered states, fears and so forth, because she was, you would think if you didn't know any better, that she was like a hardcore Christian, because anytime we did any feats using her skills, and when I was on the phone, I said this before, she would indicate and tell me, she goes, I don't care if you go to church or not, or whether you believe Jesus is right or not, but you're gonna need to repeat after me. And she would always say, she'd alter states, lower our heartbeats, relax, and then affirm Jesus Christ is in me through me and around me. And that wasn't about Christianity. That was about attaching to a frequency that's been on this planet for way longer than Christ was on the planet, actually. It's a certain frequency. It's a very special frequency. She could see it, too. And she could see why when she was viewing it. Because I asked her, I said, why are we doing that? Can't we use Buddha or something else? Because it's a different frequency. Because she could actually see that the Christ consciousness has a certain color, pattern, and ratio to it that affects energy fields.
Okay, now, one other thing. Animals, so-called animals, consciousness. How did she rate them? Dogs, cats, pets, animals,
well,
and beef,
she
giraffes, elephants?
Cats.
What does she think?
She said that they did have consciousness and that they had special assignments here, that they were just a part of the earth and in many cases more important to it than humans were. And she was specifically talking about the caretaking over the aquatics and the water, because she knew that the water mm-hmm. was the key to the whole planet. So she spent an enormous amount of time watching and observing whale and dolphin communications, specifically dolphin. She said the whales is quite different. But she said it was the dolphins that she tried to explain to me how they oversee human activity in her observation, that
wow.
they participated in human activity, mm-hmm. even though they're in the water out at sea. They mm-hmm. could tap into humans on land.
Wow. Fascinating. I'm not surprised.
Yeah, because her limitations on what the mind can do were obviously completely different than the normal person. So she could extend her perceptions in places that people wouldn't even allow themselves to go, only because she had so much visual stimulus going
right.
on from the brain
right.
that
right.
It drove her crazy. I mean, she would take me, one of the things she would do in the first year as I got to know her, she goes, okay, enough over the phone. He said, I'm going to work with you while you sleep. And I said, what do you mean? Are you going to work with me while I sleep? I didn't even know what that meant. Because at that time, I had no idea that the sleeping process and that you leave the body every night and all these activities take place. And mm-hmm. she would oversee my sleeping patterns and during the night clean out a lot of garbage that was in the energy field from just going out around in life. And
oh, sure.
I'd wake up in the morning yeah. and I'd be absolutely exhausted sometimes. I'd be more tired getting up
right.
than once before I went to go to sleep. And she'd yell at me like, that's me. Uh-huh. Don't you understand what's going on? Don't you remember anything? She'd just like get on my case about it.
Oh, that's funny. I really come to the point that most people are so diminished intellectually now and so polluted with frequencies, with negativity, with negative colors. How's that? With darkness. I don't, when I see people, it's kind of a draining thing for me. I'm just speaking for me. There's nothing emanating from them. They're all like little mini black holes to one degree or another. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. No, I know. They're on autopilot.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just
walking along. They're not. These are... One of the most fulfilling things for me in life was to be able to put Marianne, Bowert, and myself together and have a real mm-hmm. conversation about exactly what was going on and how consciousness worked and what our capabilities really were and what we could mm-hmm. really do if we put our quote-unquote minds to it. And this was the most beneficial thing I ever learned. And what's happened to most of culture now is they've modified us and molded us into our technological creations through monopolies. And this is where the conversation was intensified when Marianne Shenefield was introduced to the works and understandings of Harold Innes, Marshall McLuhan, all the famous media ecologists of her time when she was alive, so she could get a better understanding of how cultures were shaped, because she wasn't aware how they were shaped. She could only see what they were doing. So that was a new understanding for her, was to explain to her that the human race was being shaped into a particular species to be.
Wow. All right, hold on just a minute. We have to take a little pause, and we'll come right back with James as we continue our conversation about Marianne Shenefield. Okay, here we are. We're talking with James Martinez about one of the most remarkable people of our times, and I'm kind of curious. She had clearly been gifted with something very extraordinary. Did she get the full ET mind meld? We use that old cliche. Or just part of it? Did she ever talk about that?
Yeah, she did, actually. She said that she did. She thought she didn't get the whole entire thing because she was basically a student. She was learning on her own based upon feedback from other people she was interfacing with. So what she saw primarily visually was technical in the form of geometric shapes, colors, frequencies, and what looked like an Egyptian or Aramaic language. And she had to learn how to live with that stimulus while having a life and while talking to people. So whilst she was, you know, ahead, way ahead of any normal person out there, she never thought that she mastered it, because it was mastering her rather than her mastering it, so to speak. So she could never find a proper balance. So she never thought she actually arrived and was at peace with it. It was always an ongoing anxieties that she had to deal with. Because what she was learning constantly.
Understand. What did she have to say about other ET races who were here, who are here, who were meddling?
She said there were multiple. One of the ones that we dealt with together was the Nine, actually. And I asked about the Nine because initially when I was introduced to her, I was introduced to her trying to get the Parajus Tesla watch and talked to her about Uri Geller. And the Nine was described in the book Uri by Playfair, who was the last name of that author. And Baharj talked about interfacing with that ET group called the Nine. And I said, and I asked her one time, so have you ever worked with the Nine? She goes, oh yeah, I've worked with them. And she says, they're a pain in the ass, but you can work with them. And that's what she said. And I said, well, what do you mean they're, well, what does that mean? She says, well, they don't have any patience. And I said, explain yourself. And because she, when we get into it, she'd get irritated by it, because she said, if you wanted to interface with the Nine, they have the Nine principal rules, and you had to interface on their time, not on your time. So she could never predict when she was ever going to do something with the Nine. And she said it was a quite different, opposing philosophy of the language that she was being taught, the language of hyperspace, which she called it. The language of the Nine was quite different, because at that time they were spending a lot of time interfacing with Baharj, Geller, Shenefield, some other locations where they claimed they were interfacing with people on the East Coast. And I don't know if it's contact key cases in the same area of Massachusetts where Betty Hill and Barney Hill and that whole area at that time, there's a lot of activity in there. I don't know if it was that time, but she explained to me that she only interfaced with them like four or five times because they were difficult to deal with in terms of timing. She would always want to prepare to deal with them. And she said they just show up. Barge would call her and say, we've had more contact with the nine. And I said, let's do something with them and communicate. And then Barge would call her and said, can you see them when they show up? He says, yeah, but it's sudden. She said, they just show up suddenly. There's no early warning system that they're going to show up on her visual radar.
What was the nature of her dealings with them? Can you quantify that? What were they doing?
That
just
was
chit-chat?
When,
just common talk?
Baharj was finishing his studies up on telepathy, and he just finished a book called The Iceland Papers, and that was the kind of scientific measuring and proof of telepathy, because he wrote two books on telepathy, Beyond Telepathy, and then the Iceland Papers. And right when the Iceland Papers came out, that's when Barharj was dealing with the nine, and that's when Marianne was dealing with the same time, because she only dealt them five or six times at that point, and they would always give her a different pattern of language. It gave her a lot of anxiety when she was dealing with them because she got overwhelmed, like, oh no, now this is a different language I'm going to have to interface with now. So she was like, oh no. So it's kind of like a person learning a bunch of languages. Oh no, now I got to learn Chinese. You know, kind of like that. That was her attitude about it. Because he wrote about the nine in Uri, and he talked about it. There's video of him talking about the nine on YouTube now, which never even existed. But she was dealing with them, that particular group, during that time when the Iceland Papers came out.
Okay. I got a question. We went through the animal. I asked about animals, pets, dogs and cats, consciousness and so forth. Can you give us her take on pets? You mentioned whales and dolphins. When people have a dog or a cat or a special pet, and there's such a bond there, and I think that
she
there's
loved her cats. She had cats. She knew exactly what they were seeing, and she knew that they had much bigger role than people think that they do. In fact, they take on enormous amount of stress off of humans that they have no idea about. She could see it. And she could see how they see, and they actually have a clear picture of our moods through our colors, because she knew that they could see the auric field just as easily as you and I could see somebody's physical body. So she always had them around the house, always. And she had two or three, actually, and she said that they were some of the best radars out there. She said they have the ability to pick up danger before it's even arrived. They're that sensitive.
I believe
she's very
that.
Protective of animals, very protective of animals, and her cats were a big part of her life, big part of her life, actually.
I'm not surprised. When you look into a special dog's eyes, you see something in there that we're supposed to have. We don't, most of us. That's unconditional love. And she didn't have dogs, but she, I'm certain, understood this.
Oh, no, she completely understood that. And she understood their role as protection. She said that they take on thought forms of people, that they're the owners of them and the people that they're in the immediate space with. They take up and nullify thought forms. She said that they cancel out thought forms of people, like moods.
Wow.
She said they could do that quite easily. And, their owners were unaware of that. You know how they say that if you have a cat on you, it lowers your blood pressure and heart rate, and it's healthy for you to have that? Later people mention about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's completely true. It goes beyond that because they're actually, they see thought forms.
Wow. I have no doubt about it. Okay. The idea of people consumed with such petty behaviors in life, does she look upon that as the great waste it really is? I'm she must have. This is, people are just
well. No, she kind of felt sorry for them because she knew that they had been kind of betrayed to begin with because they were conditioned and following instructions and following laws and following all this. Mm-hmm. So she really didn't. She didn't look down upon them. She didn't look down on people.
But they've been brainwashed into uselessness. Yeah. Go ahead.
She looked down on criminals. I mean, she was really pissed at the military. She did not like what the military stood for. And thought they were the least qualified people to deal with extraterrestrials.
Did she have a timetable as to when this asinine cover-up is going to finally go away? Everyone's talking about a report's coming out in June. They're going to admit it. Hell, they've already admitted it. We don't need the government to tell us what's real and what isn't real. We simply need to do a little research. It's all right there. Did she have anything to say about that? The ET cover-up is going to end.
She knew it was going to end. She didn't ever say the date, and mm-hmm. she said they were going to end it. The extraterrestrial,
not the human faculty.
She said they're going to deal with it their way.
Well, they talk about this fake ET invasion being used to stampede the sheep and drive them more further into the arms of the global elite. Out of fear. And of course, they used 2020 to drive fear into everyone over this stupid, non-existent viral pandemic. So here's fear. ET invasion, a fake ET invasion, they say. Possibly human and ET. Maybe one of the groups will work with us. We have technology that can mimic all of these craft and so forth. Maybe she was saying that the fake ET invasion... Maybe she didn't talk about that because it's not going to be a fake ET. Maybe it's going to be a real ET presence, which you just mentioned, that's going to show up here and put an end to all the BS, and that's it. Done.
Over. She had a weird attitude about that because to her, she was living it. And she already could see them all over the planet all the time. And so they're already here now. The people that can't see them, it's because they... don't want to see them, number one, and they're not prepared to deal with it. They can't deal with it. So there's a, you've heard those stories about people that are in certain groups, like a group of 10 people, and there'll be a sighting, and six of the people will see it, and the others won't, and they were right
they
there.
They won't see
right
anything.
In front of them.
Nothing.
Right.
Right.
That's part of the issue, is that they're not capable, and their brains are not set up. Because nobody's really seen with their eyes. Everybody's blind, and they're seeing a very small
amount.
It's
getting worse, James. In my view, my humble analysis, it's intentionally been worsened. We are really in trouble now as a so-called sentient species on this planet. We're in bad trouble, and as
but
you said, a lot of people are going to check out. Yeah,
the better it will get. The worse it gets is the more people and the more pain and the more inconvenience and all those things that pile up is going to force everybody inward, which is exactly where they should be looking. They shouldn't be looking on TV. They should not be looking in the church. They should not be looking on the computer. They should be forcing ourselves inward to look at ourselves. And then the decision will be made at some particular point when we're in that position, what we're going to do. Are we going to save ourselves or not? I mean, I always told Marianne, and she finally agreed with me, and it was only from the influence of another contactee that I know, that the UFOs were the gods of inner space. They're not the gods of outer space. They're the gods of inner space.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big difference. And she fought that for a little while until she finally concluded that that's actually true. That they're the gods of inner space. Until we can attach ourselves and our godhood and take our power back, it will continue to get worse. That's what
it is. Define inner space for us a little bit more. Just a little bit more on inner space. The gods of inner space.
Your inner space. Inner space would be the part that's behind your five senses, your sixth sense, and your seventh sense. Your sixth sense is your intuitive psychic faculties, and the seventh sense is the sense that makes sense of all the other senses. Behind that, that's what I'm referring to. Because Walter and I were trying to track human perception on how they were going to roll this whole thing out. And that's one of the things that we discussed with Marianne, is how we process information and human perception of what is and what isn't in reality. And determining, once we could figure that out, or at least hypothesize what it is, where that inner space is that allows us to participate in a UFO event. It's a co-event when it occurs. People say, "Oh, I saw a UFO," but they don't say, "I felt a UFO" or I envisioned a UFO when it happened. Because they're objectively looking outward at it and thinking it's something separate from them, when really they're participating in an event as they're perceiving it. That's the gods of inner space. So something is going on within the human family where some people are seeing these and some people are not. And the one thing that Marianne, in her older years when I was dealing with her, she was pretty frustrated, and she came to the conclusion, because, well, this was done to me, and this happened to me, and she was very angry many times. But eventually she realized that somehow in this incarnation, she agreed to participate in that learning engagement with those species. She didn't say that initially because she was very angry at what they had done to her, because it so altered her life. But she concluded later on in her life that she participated in that interface. Because, you know, she could have not told anybody and just blocked it all out and went on with her life.
You know, I was going to say earlier tonight that I'll bet there are people who have never said a word, who have had similar things.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I think some of the biggest cases in the world that are out there, they're not saying a word. You know why? Because they don't need media validation. They don't need to sell books. They don't need to go on a parade. They don't need to go on the radio. They don't need to be in a documentary. They don't need to call Greer up. They don't need to do any of that. They don't give a damn. And they're going to keep it to themselves and get on with their lives. There's lots of them, I bet you. Lots of them. If I had something like that happen to me, if I had something like that happen to me through her, what I saw, I'm not sure I would want to be out in the public at all. It would have been too overwhelming, way overwhelming for her to deal with that.
Because
of the mass stimulus and the examination. I mean, her psychiatrist and doctors spent an enormous amount of time examining her. And then ultimately having to examine themselves. She switched the tables on all her shrinks and doctors.
Oh, that's funny. I don't like shrinks and doctors much. Paradigm.
When you're legislating consciousness, it's a dangerous game.
Yes, it is. We just have about 5 minutes. Dream states. Did she describe what dreams were all about at all? Did you guys talk much about that?
Yeah, because she said, if you're not understanding what I'm talking to now, and we'd go through all the archetypes, all the colors, explaining how all those things worked. So if you're not understanding what I'm saying, well, I'm going to teach it to you at night, because you'll be better able to absorb that information in an altered state, because you won't argue with me, or you won't ponder, and you'll be more kind of somnambulistic, or it's a more of a hypnotic state where you absorb knowledge without fighting it. So she goes, I'll come to you during the night, and I'll teach you this way. So when I'd go to sleep, a lot of times I would dream in a certain color. The whole vision would be in a certain color. Then I'd report to her what those dreams were, because I'd write them down in the morning, and then we'd discuss them. And then that's when I really got lost with what she was trying to explain to me, what it meant at that time, because she said, well, in your dreams, this time, instead of just going to sleep and randomly doing that, I want you to look at this particular shape as you're falling asleep, and she'd describe a certain shape or figure, and she'd say, mm-hmm. I want you to put this color over here to the left, this color to the right, and I want you to put this symbol in the center. I just want you to look at that and gaze into that before you drift off, which I thought was interesting because I said, what are we doing here? What does that mean? And she said, this is a certain communication archetype that the extraterrestrials use for zeroing in and locating somebody. And I had no way at that time of understanding what was going on, because a lot of time she would be practicing with me, teaching me, and then using me as like a student, a way of figuring out if she could teach an entire class to people if they'd understand. Because she was learning her own language and then trying to teach me what she had learned. But I didn't have the ability.
She was using you to make tools, her own tools.
Exactly. That's correct. That was correct. I was incredibly lucky and privileged to have spent that time with her. I mean, really lucky. I mean, I'll never forget it, ever.
Oh, I'm. You don't have to tell me. I hear it loud and clear. And I'm very grateful to you for spending time sharing some of this. There's obviously much more, but we'll talk again. And if you would, James, maybe just make a list of things that you might want to talk about that we haven't touched on, and we'll come back again and we'll revisit this. Do you think that she's still around? Does she stop in and check on you from time to time?
No, I know she is. I know she is. I know she has. I mean, I talked to her about 2 months before she died. We talked for 20 seconds, and I said, stick around, to her at the very end. And she smiled and kind of laughed. She goes, okay, bye. She knew exactly what that meant, because I knew she was getting toward close to dying. So I didn't get to speak to her prior to, but she veers in, and I know when she's around. I can feel it. She has a very specific thing, frequency.
I bet she does, no doubt. Wow. Anything else that you want to add? Did she think that we were going to, some of us were going to succeed here on this planet?
No, or? She knew entirely people were going to succeed, but it was going to be a big job, and people were going to have to apply themselves.
Yeah.
That, it's very simple. There's no shortcuts to salvation.
And no one's going to come and pick up your stuff for you. You got to do it. You got
to
do it. That's the lesson.
Have to do that, that's the lesson. And some people are willing to do that, and I know quite a few people that are willing to do that, and there's some that are not. And this is part of our graduation, because if we're not willing to do that, there's no way we could interface with higher intelligence and deal with it. We can't deal with ourselves. That's really the lesson.
And that is the biggest lesson of all, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
We're in this position because of what we've done, and we have to get out of it by doing what we need to do.
I know all of you listening get this, and I just hope you have luck trying to help some of your friends who are sitting on the fence or on the wrong side of the fence. Very frustrating. Very frustrating. James, thank you again, and I look forward to another conversation. You just let me know when you're ready, and we'll do it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Jeff. You hang in there.
Okay. Good night.
Good night.
James Martinez. What a story. All right, we'll be back. Hang on.